Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Break Cycle. Be your host, Joshua Smith. I hope everyone's having a wonderful
Thursday. Yeah.
It is Thursday. It's our normal show night, but I am doing shows now live Tuesday and Thursday, kind of bringing it back old school. We're not going to do five shows a week like I used to. I used to do Monday through Friday. I missed those days. Those were good days.
That was before I ever knew who you were.
Yeah, that was before you knew me. And that was, it was so hard to book a guest 5 days a week. Let me tell you, dude, it's hard.
That was before I was even, like, officially a libertarian.
Yeah. It was, I mean, that was 2021, beginning of 2021. So it was a long time ago. I'm flying to Atlanta tomorrow for the greatest state convention this year, hosted by myself. And Top Lobster is going to be there, and Clint, and all the dudes from Tower Gang. And I think Clint is actually helping to moderate the debate. There'll be a presidential debate. And Toad is
president candidate.
And Toad is going to be in. So,
oh, that should be interesting.
Toad will be in the presidential debate. It's going to be absolutely insane. I'm looking forward to it. I get there tomorrow afternoon. I leave Sunday morning. So if you're in the Atlanta area, we'll be in Conyers, Georgia, debating and hanging out with a bunch of cool libertarians. And there's a whole bunch of people. I even think the redheaded libertarian's coming this time too. So it'll be all kinds of cool people there. I'm excited for it. If you guys are around, you should see it. I can't see the live chat tonight. I don't know what's going on. So I got Ryan watching for... Oh, there. I refreshed it. It showed up. Okay. I can see you guys now.
Oh, I was going to tell them we need to test if you can see super chats.
Yeah. Well, I got it pulled up now. So if you guys throw your super chats, of course, they'll get read on air. Also, if you got some time, please hit that subscribe button. Hit the thumbs up. Get that algorithm moving. Also, go to vote.freeandequal.org and vote for me for a presidential debate that... I am now currently in seventh four. We have to be in the top six.
That will put me
in the debate live on television against people like Cornel West and Jill Stein and RFK Jr.
For the boomers.
I can represent. I have to go there. We can't let the commies win. Guys, go check out, of course, toplobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break Cycle, where you can get all kinds of great hats, backpacks, hoodies. You can get a custom Break the Cycle pillow for your couch stream. And all kinds of other great stuff. You can get it for a 10% discount by using BTC at checkout for that discount. Or you can join the Patreon subscribe store. Become a member of the YouTube channel under all of my videos by hitting the join link. And you can get in a private Discord server where maybe someday he'll drop some new gear. And you can get it up to 30% off 2 weeks before it goes to the general public. Let's check in with my co-host, Mr. Ryan Kurtz. Sir, how are you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. I'm prepping.
Huh?
I'm prepping for the upcoming Tim Pool's favorite saying, the Civil War.
Oh, the Civil War. Yeah, it's, we're going to talk about the Civil War today.
Well, it's like I've said a number of times, another match in that field of dynamite.
Yeah, I'll also be back on TimCast on the 5th, on February 5th. So I'll be back there for the third time. That's crazy. I'm getting a third invite. Hopefully they'll have people like Dave and Scott back before me, but... You know, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the blue eyes. Oh, we got a great guest for you guys tonight. I'm very excited. The news editor, one of the main editors over at antiwar.com, one of the greatest .coms in the world. If you're not following antiwar.com, you definitely need to. Our good friend and amazing Dave DeCamp, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, man. Thank you for coming on. I know your time's very limited. This guy just sits around and writes and does videos all day long. That's his whole life. And he makes people aware of what's really going on in the world. And there's a lot going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can only imagine being somebody like Dave or Scott who has to survey all of the bullshit that's going on around the world. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do, Dave, and why you do it and why it's important to you?
Yeah, so, I mean, my main role at antiwar.com is... I basically write kind of short news summaries every day. I do, you know, I average like six articles a day, and it's, you know, focused on U.S. foreign policy. And, you know, there's so much going on, and we have a pretty small team. So lately, you know, it has felt a little overwhelming with all these escalations in the Middle East. I mean, I can't believe like we're at where we are right now. I mean, we got the U.S. bombing Iraq, Syria, Yemen again. It's just a complete disaster. But so pretty much, you know, I work, I start work around noon and I work till midnight, basically writing. And then at the end of the day, I record my show, which I put out like a daily news podcast. It's definitely, you know, it gets infuriating, but I'm able to kind of, you know, I have a great life outside of that. I work from home. I have two kids. I live out in the country. So I'm like really able to kind of turn it off and go outside in the garden. I mean, it's the winter now, but you know what I mean?
Oh, I know. As somebody who lives in the Midwest, do I know that it's wintertime? Yeah. Holy crap. Yeah. We got a,
it was 70 degrees here in Virginia for some reason.
Right nice. So. Well, we had a really mild winter, and then all of a sudden God was like, you're going to get all of winter at once. And they gave us Arctic temperatures, like negative 40 with a wind chill, and like 3 feet of snow. It's been absolutely insane. But we're now it's like 30s and raining, and it's everything's washing away. So
yeah, that's crazy.
We kind of lucked out. But yeah, man, you talked a lot about all these places that we're bombing. I mean,
playing all the hits.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing, like we were talking a little bit about this before the show. I was watching Iraq War One, Bush Senior. From my coffee table. It was probably, honestly, it was the first war you could watch live on television. I remember watching hours of war footage live. It literally had a little red box on the bottom that said live. Like, when in history could you remember watching a war live? A lot of people are always like, Vietnam. I'm like, no, Vietnam was recorded stuff that was sent home and then put on news broadcasts. But we watched like hours and hours of the bombs in Iraq. And here it is 40 years later. I mean, you know, really, truly, I mean, not 40, but close. It's getting there. We're moving on 40 years, over 30 years of these bombs dropping on Iraq. We have the probably the worst, especially my lifetime, humanitarian crisis in Yemen. And yet we're bombing Yemen again. Syria, who, let's be honest, we lied our way into, you know, this problem with them before by saying that, you know, Assad gassed his own people. And it's like, so I saw Scott Horton put out an article the other day about this tripwire for war with Iran. And I had been banging that drum for a while. If you guys remember, I said very clearly on the show several times that if we put boots on the ground in Israel with Palestine and start kind of pushing our fingers in the chest of places like Yemen and Pakistan and Iraq again and Syria, that they know that that 100% is going to put us in a war with Iran. And so I've been saying this was the tripwire for the war that they wanted for years and years and years anyways. What are your thoughts on the tripwire with Iran? How possible is that war? Do you think it's something that's coming soon?
Yeah, so when this thing first started, when that Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th, and then Israel, you know, kind of unleashed its campaign in Gaza, at the time, it didn't seem like they were trying to provoke a war with Iran, just because they didn't blame the Hamas attack on Iran, because whether or not Iran was involved, which there's no evidence that they were, that they helped plan it or anything like that. But if they wanted, you know, immediately to kind of take it to Iran, they would have blamed them. That's just, you know, their MO. If they want to cook up an enemy, you know, they have the propaganda apparatus to do that. So I didn't see that at first. But now, I mean, Netanyahu is basically trying to provoke a huge war for his political survival. There's all these polls in Israel that they want him to step down, you know, once the war is over. There's like a kind of a political reckoning for him, because the huge intelligence failure on October 7th, or, you know, there's enough evidence that Israel should have known something was coming, that a lot of people are starting to think maybe they let it happen. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable. They had Hamas's attack plans for over a year. And their IDF soldiers, whose job it was to surveil Gaza from the border, were basically reporting like, oh, they're training, you know, they're training right out in the open for what looks like, you know, a mock invasion. And nobody did anything about it. There was intelligence that something was coming around that time. So Netanyahu is really coming under a lot of fire for that. And something Scott Horton's really been covering and harping on a lot is Netanyahu's strategy, you know. His whole strategy to prevent a Palestinian state was to kind of help prop up Hamas and to separate them from the Palestinians in the West Bank. And he facilitated Qatari money going into Gaza. So that this is all kind of compounding on itself. And so Israelis are pissed at Netanyahu, but for the most part, they support what he's doing in Gaza right now. So he knows, you know, what he wants to do is basically provoke a big war. Israel recently launched a drone strike in Beirut in Lebanon, which was a huge escalation. That's the first time Israel bombed Beirut since the 2006 Lebanon war. So they're really trying to provoke Hezbollah. And they're killing Iranians in Syria. That's what Israel's doing. So it seems pretty clear right now that Israel wants this thing to really explode.
Right.
And now on the other hand, you got the U.S. And so the thing Scott wrote up the other day, there was a report in the New York Times, because U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria have come under attack like 150 times or something now since October. And this report said that Biden and his like top aides basically think it's just a matter of time before an American soldier dies And then if that happens, then they're probably going to bomb Iran in response. So direct war with Iran, which is just completely insane. And there's also the escalations in Yemen. I mean, that's kind of a whole nother thing to get into. But yeah, it's just there's so much going on. The one kind of goodish news is that Iraq, the Iraqi government, wants the U.S. to get out. And they're starting these talks on that they want it to result in the U.S. pulling out.
Finally.
But you have the U.S. kind of saying like, oh, well, we're going to, you know, try to establish bilateral, like they're just wording it very, you know, at making it as complicated as possible because they don't want to say, oh, yeah, we might have to actually leave Iraq, but they really want to get them out. So hopefully that progresses. The only thing is the U.S. has a lot of power over Iraq because their money, their foreign currency is held by the U.S. Federal Reserve. So they can destroy the Iraqi. They could destroy the Iraqi economy if they wanted to. So if they get kind of kicked out, you know, they can really put the screws on Iraq. So that's factoring into all that. They're basically holding the country hostage. I mean, yeah. They're on the precipice of another big war in Iraq, and they're saying get out. So why don't we just get out?
Well, we're on the precipice with total world war with the entire Middle East at this point. I mean, really, that's what it, you know. When you start thinking about it, we don't have a ton of allies in the Middle East, like legit allies in the Middle East. I mean, a lot of the Middle East doesn't want us there.
Yeah, hasn't not really.
Us there for decades.
We used to be allies with Saudi Arabia, but not as much.
We're still allies with Saudi
not
Arabia.
Not much anymore since we're not as dependent on their oil. We used to be allies with Turkey and Pakistan,
Turkey, or is it Turkey or Pakistan, has American nuclear weapons.
Turkey.
It's Turkey, yeah. Turkey has some of our nuclear weapons.
Turkey's kind of a strange, like, because they're a NATO ally, but they're also kind of do their own thing. Like they've been basically against the whole NATO involvement in Ukraine. And Erdogan has his own interests. So they're kind of a wild card, but yeah, it is crazy that the U.S. has nukes in Turkey.
Yeah,
and when it comes to like the Saudis and the Gulf countries, like most of them basically are still U.S. allies, but they're basically just places where the U.S. can have military bases.
Right.
Like they don't have too much of a military.
Yeah. It's like Bahrain, Dubai,
Qatar,
Jabali.
Yeah,
we're losing our presence in Iraq and Afghanistan. The countries
I think we've lost our presence in Afghanistan.
Yeah,
for the most part, it's gone.
Losing and or lost.
Yeah,
and all those countries that I listed would be potential paths to, if we were to escalate to war with Iran. Those would be paths to get into Iran.
Well, Iraq for sure. I mean, I think that's the number one stronghold for Americans if we wanted to go to war with Iran. Wouldn't you say, Dave? I mean, would there be a better strategic place for us than there?
Well, yeah. I mean, it is right next to it. But when it comes to kind of naval, like say they want to just launch some Tomahawk missiles into Iran, I mean, there's a pretty huge U.S. naval presence. And I believe the biggest base is actually in Qatar, the biggest U.S. base
in the
Middle East.
That would make sense. I'd say. I know that as in the Navy in 2003 and four, when we launched, you know, Operation Iraqi Freedom and then we were the Shock and Awe campaign. I mean, our battle group was a Shock and Awe campaign. It was comprised of 100 million tons of ordnance dropped on the middle.
I think I lost you. Uh-oh. You're muted. Can you hear me? I think you're muted. I can't hear anything. I don't know what happened. Let me check my. Hello. I don't know what's going on. I can't hear it or I can't hear anything. Should I get out and try to get back in? Test. Hey, I still can't hear you. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? I still can't hear you. I got nothing. What the hell's going on? Everything looks good on my end. Hello.
Check, check, check. Check, 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 check. I can see the audio. I can see our audio. I can see our audio in OBS. Like, I can see it.
Weird.
Hold on. Sorry, Dave. I've never seen this happen before.
This is brand new.
Check.
Now I got you.
You got me.
Oh, hello?
Okay.
We're back.
We're back?
Oh. I don't even know what you did.
I didn't do anything. I didn't change anything, dude.
Okay.
That was weird. Everything looked normal on my end. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. My camera went off too.
We weren't even talking about Israel that much.
We were talking about Israel though. This always happens every time we talk about Israel. We're back. Our audio's good. Everybody's all right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they can hear Dave and Ryan. Is that good? Are we good?
They could hear you the whole time, Dave.
Yeah, they all could hear you. They couldn't hear us all of a sudden.
Oh, really? You heard me like, hello.
Yeah, something happened with our audio.
I didn't hear no bells.
We had some kind of failure where it just kicked my mic off of everything. I don't know why. That was really weird. Yeah. Anyways, where were we? I got sidetracked and I forgot where we were.
Yeah, we were talking about Iraq. You were talking about your experience in 2003, 2004.
Yeah, and I was saying that the only place we were allowed to port was Bahrain. I mean, that was it. That was the one place we were allowed to port. And I'll never forget, we ported there, and I was young, 18, 19 years old, and you want to go out to the bars and shit because you're stuck out on a ship. In fact, at one point we had two beer days, so that means we did 90-something days straight out to sea without seeing land. And so we pulled into Bahrain, and we went to an Irish pub called Kelly's where there were two women from England bartending in the Middle East. It was most bizarre shit ever. And there was a guy sitting in the bar, you know, that started throwing sandals at people and was all pissed off that we were there. And I remember it was like the first time in my life where I was like, oh, not everybody likes Americans. You know what I mean? Like it was the very first time in my life where I was like, oh, these people, there's people here that hate us. And they were telling us you couldn't go out in your uniform there. You had to go out in regular clothes. They told you to be super careful, like go with buddies, all this stuff. And, you know, you don't think about that shit when you're 18. You're like, I'm just going to party. I don't, you know. But a lot of people would stay on base there. They had this big thing called the Thunderdome. And you could buy, like, you know, $1 beers there. And everybody was just partying in this Thunderdome, all these military guys.
Sounds
and
like
I was like,
a good time.
Well, and I was like, no, dude, I'm going to get out in a taxi and go out and party in town because I want to go out somewhere else. And, I remember like the taxi cab drivers fighting each other over like our fares, like trying to get a fare. They were like physically fighting each other. It was bizarre, man. It was a weird place, but it's also like one of the only like free countries as free as you can get in the Middle East, but free countries in the Middle East. It's pretty weird, man. I don't know. You've never been out of the country really, huh?
No, I've never been out of the country.
What about you, Dave? You traveled a lot.
Yeah, I went to Jordan a few years ago, and that was a really cool experience. I stayed in Amman in the capital. And everybody there was like, you know, it's the capital of Amman is pretty, there's a lot of Westerners and stuff, but for the most, you know, everybody was super friendly and like, it was really cool. There's Jordan, there's like just amazing things to see there, like Petra and there's Roman ruins and stuff. So I was just kind of like exploring around. I went to the desert and Wadi Rum and like stayed with Bedouins.
Oh, shit.
And floated in the Dead Sea. It was a sick trip.
Yeah, that's
I just
pretty
wanted
cool.
to like go to the Middle East. I never been, and Jordan looked like kind of a good, you know, safe place to go, but it's kind of still like really, you know, you're really there.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And
that's
I
like
was
historic
young, actually,
Middle East. That's like the historic Middle East too. I mean, Jordan is very historic. So
I was thought about going into the West Bank because you could go in through Jordan, but everybody I talked to was like, it might, you know, it could take you like a whole day to get in because the Israelis can be really strict.
Right.
But it was interesting because like half of Jordan's population is Palestinian refugees.
Right.
So I like hung out with a lot of Palestinians, and you know, a lot of them were young kids, and I mean, they all spoke like perfect English. They were into Western, you know, movies and culture and stuff. So it was kind of, because you just have like this picture in your mind, but you know, that's kind of how most people are, as far as I understand it, in the Levant, in like Syria, Iraq, and Jordan. You know, because there's also a lot of Syrian refugees there, because it was when the war was still really bad there. Yeah, so you know, you go there. I was kind of assuming, because at that point I was assuming everybody would hate me, but no, everybody was really, really friendly.
Yeah, a lot of the Middle East is like that, and people don't understand that, yeah. especially Iran.
That's what I hear too. Yeah,
yeah. It's funny because so when I lived in Portland, Oregon, my roommates were Persian. I worked at a Persian restaurant. I was the manager of a fine dining Persian restaurant and bar. I hung around Persians all the time, constantly, and they were like, "Oh, we're gonna like sponsor you to go to Iran. You gotta check out Tehran. It's one of the most beautiful cities in the world." I didn't know shit about Iran prior to that, you know. And I started kind of studying it and looking into Iran. And Tehran is like a big, beautiful, gorgeous city with like mountains, and it snows there, and which is wild to think about, because you're like, everyone just thinks the Middle East is this like dust bowl area, and that's it, right? And it was one of the most viral tweets I've ever made. It got like 2.5 million. Impressions or something. This was years ago when I only had like maybe 5,000 followers or something, and I posted a picture of Tehran and you know, kind of made an ode to the bloodthirsty warhawks, saying, you know, this isn't just some desert town that you can turn to glass. This is a giant city with millions of people living in it that have dreams and goals and aspirations and family pets, and people get up and go to their construction jobs in the morning. And it went nuts, because nobody knows like all these Middle Eastern countries that we're bombing, like the normal American here is like, doesn't give a shit, because they don't know anything about that place. They think it's just some like dust bowl full of like people who walk around in like old school flip-flops and are terrorists. That's it. That's all they know about the whole Middle East, the whole thing.
Have you heard, listen to any of Lord Miles's account of the months he spent with the Taliban?
Yeah.
And then he came back.
Lord Miles, Rutledge. Yeah.
Did a bunch of interviews about it. And now he's back with the Taliban just hanging out.
No, he left.
Oh, really?
Oh, did he leave left. Again? Yeah.
No, they had arrested him and he disappeared for like 4 months. And people thought he was dead. People thought they killed him, but they just released him recently, and he came back.
Yeah, and then he went back. He's back with the Taliban again. Really, he's just hanging out.
Holy shit, dude. That's crazy to me. I can't even believe that.
That's funny.
So what do you think comes next? I mean, strategically for Americans and America in the Middle East, I mean, what do you think comes next, Dave? What do you think they're going to do next?
So I was very pessimistic for these past few weeks, but these talks that they're getting into with Iraq about ending the U.S. military presence there, that might actually lead to something good. And there's also been reports right now, just very, you know, unconfirmed, basically media reports saying that there's conversations within the Biden administration about withdrawing from Syria. Great. So I think they might be like, all right, is this really worth it right now? Because what they're doing before this all popped off was, you know, fueling the war in Ukraine against Russia, and really pretty like rapidly building up around in Southeast Asia, in the Philippines,
right?
You know, to prepare for this future war with China, which, you know, it's really crazy. You hear these top U.S. military officials say, they say that kind of their line is, oh, we're trying to deter war, but if it does happen, we have to be ready to win. So basically saying that they're preparing to fight a war with China, which is a nuclear armed power. You know, this whole idea that two nuclear armed states shouldn't directly fight is kind of gone by the wayside now with these people that have been in charge for the past couple decades. They're thinking that, you know, they can do it now. And so I think that there's definitely elements of the government that are like, all right, you know, because there is a super pro-Israel side. Like, Biden is about as pro-Israel as an American politician can get. I mean, it's pretty incredible. I don't know if you've seen these rallies he's been going to.
Oh.
Everyone is getting disrupted, and not just like one protester. Like, I think the last two speeches he gave, it was like throughout the thing, somebody else would jump up, call him Genocide Joe. Like, And he's just going along, still just giving Israel whatever they want. I mean, I wrote up a thing today about they're moving along these plans to give them more F-35 fighter jets and F-15s and Apache helicopters. And these are things I know, at least the F-35 deal, that's going to be funded by U.S. aid, by the U.S. taxpayer. So it's pretty amazing that it's just going along. But I still think that there has to be some people that are somewhat rational in there that are like, okay, we can't have war with Iran. Like, we could support Israel killing the Palestinians, but then because then they have to completely sink all their resources into the Middle East again. And I don't think they want to do that. But then again, what they're doing in Yemen, I mean, they're bombing the Houthis, who are not going to stop from, you know, some airstrikes that, you know, they just survived like a really brutal U.S.-backed Saudi-UAE war against them. Basically 7 years of just like a vicious bombing campaign and blockade, and they just got stronger. So like, and they're basically welcoming this. Their leader, I forget his full name, but he's Al-Houthi. He was saying, oh, it's a blessing to be in a direct confrontation with the U.S.
Yeah, I saw that. He said it was a blessing.
Dude. Yeah. This is what they wanted. Scott interviewed this guy, Nasser Arabi. He's a Yemeni journalist in Sana'a, a few weeks ago. And basically he said that he thinks they were trying to provoke the U.S. And that's it. You know, Biden fell right into it. He started bombing them. They started attacking American commercial ships. They weren't doing that before. Now they're firing missiles at them. So it's like, it's just a mess.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand. I brought this up the other day. A lot of people do not understand that Americans, you know, young American kids that are led to war through the U.S. military are excited to die for their country. These people find it as a blessing to their God to die in a war. Like they're not scared at all. And they're actually, they like celebrate the death of their brothers and sisters and anybody who's dies to because they're of one of these conflicts, because they believe that dying in this way is like a huge honor. It's the biggest honor you can have to their God. Right. And so when we get in a conflict with somebody like a group like the Hezbollah or the Houthis or any of these groups, ISIS, they're excited. They get excited about it. Even if they think they might lose, they're excited about it because they know they're going to be able to grow their cause 100% guaranteed. Look at the Taliban, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, we went to war with the Taliban and we left 21 years later and they waltzed back in to Kabul and just like they never left. And we had been fighting for 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, this is how these groups are. And the Middle East is a hard terrain to traverse. It's very hard to have a war in the Middle East, in most parts of the Middle East. Especially places like Afghanistan and Iran, which has a ton of mountains and stuff too.
Yeah, it's mountainous.
Yeah, but my concern and my biggest concern going into all this and why I've been beating this drum for a while now is we're pushing our fingers in Russia's chest, because we have been. Backing Ukraine is obviously pushing the chest of Russia.
Yeah, and the chemical weapons facilities.
We're talking about for the first time since God Nixon saying we're going to go to war with China if they mess with Taiwan. And on top of that, we're messing with every single group in the Middle East that doesn't like us.
And we're continuing to grow the debt spiral and our credit rating is getting downgraded. Yeah. And somehow we're going to pay for all of these wars.
Right. Well, it's not just that. It's the fact that like all of those three things combined at the same time would be the worst world war this country has ever faced. There's no doubt about it. Especially in this technological age, with all the warfare that they have now, you know, it's not beyond the pale to think that it's going to come here to our shores for the first time, really, ever, except for Pearl Harbor and maybe 9/11, if you consider that, you know, an act of war, which, you know, maybe it was, but it definitely wasn't an act of war by Iraq, where we ended up going and killing a bunch of people. But I mean, you know, what is, you know, with this thing with China, let's talk a little bit about China and Taiwan. I've said that's a tripwire for, you know, Taiwan is a tripwire for war with China as well. And it is, I believe it is the first time since, because there's always, I talked to Scott about this, you know, and a lot of the stuff I get comes from Scott and you guys and others, but there's always been this component of like big friend from high school, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, we've told Taiwan, like, don't mess with China. If you mess with China, you know, we might not protect you. And then we've told China, like, if you mess with Taiwan, we might protect them. And it just kind of worked. We've never had to say we would go to war. And then all of a sudden, you know, Dementia Joe comes out and goes, we will go to war with China, like, publicly, if they mess with Taiwan. And it's like, holy shit. Like, that's the first time since Nixon. So, I mean, we're talking decades that anybody said that. I mean, do you think that's a real possibility, Dave? Do you think that America would be dumb enough to do? Well, yeah, we all know they'd be dumb enough to do that. But do you think that would happen?
I mean, yeah. Well, so the thing with Biden, like, I know Bush, I think other presidents have kind of said, oh, yeah, we would defend Taiwan. But then it's like a huge deal and they walk it back. The White House says, oh, that's not really what they meant. And with Biden, you know, who knows? It's Dementia Joe. So, you know, you can't really take what he says seriously. But he said it 4 times. And the last time he said it, the White House was like, yeah, his comments speak for himself, for themselves, basically.
Oh, God.
But I mean, the thing is, you know, the risk of China like attacking and invading Taiwan, I think, is overblown. But at the same time, this is such a, like, this is the biggest issue for China. It's like the most sensitive possible thing ever. It'll always matter way more to China than to the US. Same thing with Ukraine and Russia. It's like, you see that now with the war fatigue in the West and Ukraine and Russia is, you know, they have time on their side. So, I mean, China could potentially attack if Taiwan and the U.S. take kind of cross their red lines, which it's such kind of like a purposely confusing, strange, like, diplomatic situation, like the status of Taiwan and the U.S. and China. And so it's hard to kind of just like talk about briefly, but basically, like, one thing that's always been considered a red line is if Taiwan declares independence, like, formally, even though they are a, you know, a de facto independent state and they say that, but if they formally declare that they're an independent country and that they're not China, because that's the whole other thing, is that China doesn't just consider Taiwan China. China also considers itself China, but they're the right, you know, in their eyes, they're the rightful China. But there was just the elections in Taiwan and the ruling party, the Democratic Progressive Party, they're like the more independent minded party, and that want independence. And then you have the Kuomintang, which is the main opposition party that is more friendly with the mainland. And if they won the presidential election, they probably would have eased tensions, but they lost. The DPP won. So we're going to kind of expect more of the same. And just in recent years, you know, besides the rhetoric, the U.S. has really increased its support for Taiwan. They started giving them military aid. So the U.S. has sold weapons to Taiwan, you know, since 1979. That was the year they severed relations with Taiwan to open up with China. They've always sold them weapons, but they've never given them, you know, Israel-style military aid where they just give it to them. And they're
F-35s. Doing that now. Here's a whole load of F-35s. And
They sell them all F-16s, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so that's there, and the U.S. sent a few hundred troops there, which might not sound like a lot, but that's more than there's been since, you know, back then. 70s, so yeah. They're really pushing it.
Such a weird thing, and the whole ordeal like has always seemed so hypocritical to me, because we're telling Russia they can't, like, you can't have your rogue province back, and we're telling China, or no, what is it? We're telling Ukraine that they can take their rogue province back. We're telling China they can't take their rogue province back. It's just such a weird, like, foreign dynamic if you think about it, right? Because, like, that's the whole thing about Ukraine and Russia is, you know,
it's not about consistency. It's about whether you're friends with us,
right? Well, and Donbass, the Donbass region is, you know, I'm a little skeptical, but it's said that it's, you know, mostly ethnic Russia. But Ukraine's saying that Russia can't have it, even though they apparently took a vote and voted to go back to Russia, which, I mean, there's so much corrupt politics in that part of the world. Who knows what's true and what's not? But at the same time, America's like, no, you can't have Taiwan back. But because why? Because we build microchips there, right? At the end of the day, that's really what it is. And we have strategic business interests there, but we mine cobalt and stuff here too, right? And silica here, and we can make all that stuff here. I mean, AMD could take in Texas, and Austin could take over the production of that stuff almost overnight.
Yeah,
guaranteed.
But on that topic, Texas might become a rogue province here.
Yeah, and that's okay. That's true. That's okay. I just want to make it clear that I am fully in favor of Texas. I think that Texas, and I posted this on Twitter earlier today, and people were so fucking mad at me about it, especially libertarians. But it's the truth. Texas has the right to set their own immigration policies, absent any input whatsoever from the federal government. The 10th Amendment gives them that right, because the federal constitution, which is not made to say what powers the government has. It's made to limit the government's powers, right? And it says very clearly that if something isn't mentioned in the constitution, it's delegated to the states. Immigration is not in the constitution. Naturalization is for people born here or stuff like that. But it doesn't say anything about people coming over our borders willy-nilly like crazy, right? And like, libertarians give me a lot of shit about this because I'm not just like a super open borders libertarian. I think that this day and age is a very trying time. And when you flood millions of people over the borders at a time, you never know who all's coming here. And there's a lot of people that hate Americans, dude. You know what I mean? So like I'm not on the same page as a lot of libertarians, but I do believe that states have the right to delegate how their borders operate.
Yeah.
And I think the federal government is in the wrong here. And we're looking at a civil war. I mean, we're talking, Greg Abbott is talking about using the full force of his National Guard, which is, by the way,
his letter made it sound like he would be willing to use force.
For people who don't understand Texas's National Guard, it's the biggest National Guard in the entire country. And they have a lot of really proud Texans in the National Guard. So
yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about this, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely like an interesting libertarian debate because you do have a lot of like open borders libertarians. But yeah, I mean, I think any kind of decentralization is good. I'm not really a border hawk. I'm not like a open borders, but there's definitely some fishy going on when you have the federal government. You see Border Patrol like, you know, cutting barbed wire and letting people in and stuff. So you have I just think the decentralization aspect of this is good. I haven't been really following it closely enough to say if I think is this really going to be some kind of civil war? I don't know. I kind of doubt it, but it's just, that doesn't mean it can't happen. But, and I think that's why things like, you know, I know one thing that libertarians have been really pushing lately is the Defend the Guard Act. I mean, I think that's really important that would prohibit the federal government from deploying a state's National Guard to a war zone that hasn't been officially declared by Congress.
Yeah, it's got to be congressional approval. Yep.
Yeah, and I think more state power and decentralization, I mean, it's just good, like, kind of no matter what the issue is, unless it's like a egregious violation of the Bill of Rights, of course. But
right. It's funny because the open borders libertarians, they've used this argument. Well, you know, the Constitution can't be used to create more tyranny, and closing your borders is tyranny. And I'm like, you know, maybe when there was like, you know, 130 million people or less living in the United States here, and they didn't have all these entitlement programs, and we didn't have the homeless crisis that we have today, and the food shortages, and, you know, 12% of the population in the United States today is having a problem putting food on the table. We can't flood millions of people over the border. You have to think about things
kind of pragmatically,
like, not just pragmatically, but like in the now, right? Like,
yeah,
there was a time when maybe open borders was cool because you had like, the quality of immigrants coming here were probably great. It was way better than they are now. And I hate to say the quality of humans, but there are some people you probably don't want here. And how do we vet the people? I mean, they're doing interviews in Mexico right now with some of the people trying to cross the border that are like flat out saying, we're terrorists and you're going to learn if we get across the border. Like, that's, we have to have a way.
That's a little concerning.
We have to have a way to like vet that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
When it comes to the border, I really, because I don't follow closely enough, like, I don't really have a sense of like the numbers of people that are coming in.
Millions.
Like, do you have any idea?
I think it was like 6 million last year, which is the population of the state I live in, basically.
No, it's that's way more than the population of the state. 1.7 million people live in the state of Iowa. 6 million people crossed the border last year. It's a crazy amount. And the thing is, though,
pretty high number.
Yeah, it's a high number, and I think that they were on track to do a lot more this year, and that's why Texas had declared a state of emergency at their border because it was so bad, and they were like, okay, well, we're going to bus the immigrants that you're forcing us to let in to your sanctuary city. So they're going to Chicago, they're going to New York, and all of a sudden those states started having a problem with immigration all of a sudden, right?
They're like, they were shutting down schools to house
people. Yeah, it was really crazy, and hospitals and stuff.
I have friends that work there. They said hotels were just being turned. Like, I actually have a friend in the National Guard whose job right now is to, at night, he goes and patrols the perimeter of a hotel in Manhattan that's just full of migrants.
That's like, crazy.
Yeah,
that's like
crazy.
Like, and then I'm told, oh, they're not a drain on resources. It's like they're using the National Guard to babysit them, bro. Like, and on top of that, free phones, free housing, free food, free healthcare. I mean, a lot of immigrants get free college. Like, if you're telling me that's not a drain on the economy of the United States, then you don't know anything about economics. I'm sorry, you just don't. Like, our entitlement programs are a large portion of our national budget, not as big as the foreign policy budget. But yeah, it's just wild to me. And I, you know, I'm rooting for, I've been, there's two like nationalist movements that I've been following for a long time. The Texit one, of course, has been a movement for several years now. But there's also another one that's called the State of Jefferson. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but it's like Northern California and Southern Oregon.
I've heard of that, where they want to split California into like three states.
No. The most northern part. So like Weed, California, Humboldt County, all those areas, Yreka, and like Southern Oregon have decided that they want to become their own state because they're tired of dealing with Portland and LA and San Francisco and Sacramento and all these states, all these cities that are making their lives unbearable for, you know, financially, especially because these guys are like, a lot of those people up there, some of that's like high desert and mountains. You got Mount Shasta, and these places are like farming meccas. Like, people don't think about California being a farming. It is a farming mecca. It is one of the biggest farming states in the entire country. And they're tired of all these, their lives being dictated by these people that live in like high rise apartments in the city. Right. And so they've been talking about doing this for a long time. And I think it's great. I wish more states and more locality. I wish localities would start saying, no, we're not going to live under your states anymore, under your state rules anymore. And I love, one of the greatest things about living in Iowa is that we have some legislators now that are like trying to put forth bills to nullify all federal gun laws. And I just want to see more of that. Like, use the 10th Amendment, dude. Like, use it. It's there for a reason. States should be using it. It's crazy that they're not using it more. I know we're getting to a point where Dave's going to have to take off soon. He's got a lot to do. He's a very busy man. Dave, give us your thoughts on the Russia-Ukrainian conflict. What happened to that? Has it just disappeared, or do you think it will pop back up big time?
It got boring.
I mean, it's still, you know, going on. There's still a lot of heavy... Yeah. There's still a lot of heavy fighting going on. And Ukraine's kind of gotten more desperate. We're seeing more attacks inside Russia. I don't know if you saw the other day, they downed a Russian transport plane inside Russia.
I saw that, and I saw that they're starting to conscript women, and I thought that was pretty strange for a country that says it's winning war.
Winning, yeah. It's crazy. I mean, Zelensky's still saying he's going to drive, you know, push all the Russians out, make them give up Crimea. I mean, it's just... just a matter of time before, you know, I think the West, the U.S., NATO say, all right, let's wrap it up here. You got to negotiate and give up all this land, because that's the only solution. Like, that's the only realistic peace deal that's going to happen. And Zelensky, you know, we're talking about Netanyahu's political career inside Ukraine. I mean, Zelensky was popular for a while, but now people are getting sick of this war. People are mad that they're family members who were drafted or who volunteered in the early days are still, you know, deployed to the front lines. Like there's protests about that. People are definitely getting sick of it. Soldiers say, in some cases, say they're basically just being sent on suicide missions on the front lines, that, you know, and Ukraine's not making any gains. So, you know, Zelensky and his friends, you know, in Washington, you know, Lloyd Austin, the Raytheon, you know, his friends at Raytheon, they all have the motive to keep this thing going. Biden wants another $60 billion for it for another year. Jeez. And I think they're probably going to give it to him. I mean, the Republicans are basically saying, give us a good deal on the border and we'll give it to you. So I think that's kind of what the U.S. would be happy to, just keep it a stalemate. You know, they think that they're hurting Russia or whatever. Just keep Russia busy with that. That's just what they want. You know, they get to send all these money and weapons over there.
I always thought it was funny that this whole part of the United States, these a lot of leftists that are like, oh, Russia's getting their ass kicked. And I'm like, do you know how absolutely massive Russia is? Do you know how much military strength they have in Russia? It always blew my mind to hear people saying, because, you know, you just kind of know that Russia is a military strong country.
The fact that the war is still happening means that Ukraine is not winning, because we have dumped more than Russia's entire GDP into the military budget of Ukraine, and they haven't pushed them out. Like, what more do you, you're better funded, you're better armed, and you haven't pushed them out, you're probably not winning.
Yeah, they're not. What do you think, Dave? You think Russia's going to lose that war?
No, I'd say it's a safe bet that no, they're probably not. But yeah, I mean, the Russians are basically just digging in now, and they're going to slowly, they're trying to take more territory in the Donbass. I mean, it has, like, Ukraine, Russia hasn't been gaining much territory. It's just because Ukrainians are so dug in as well, but they are, like, kind of slowly starting to gain more. So if it just goes on, and they're out firing them right now with artillery 10-1.
Jeez. That's a lot.
The Russians. So it's just like, it's just going to be a slow slog of just death and Russia making some gains. And that's just, it could go on for a long time.
Sounds like every war Russia's ever been in, to be honest with you. It's always been just a slow slog of death. When you talk about Russian warfare, dude, I don't know. True. It's true. It's how it is.
It kind of sounds like they're, kind of their economic policy in general.
Yeah, that too. Well, Dave, I know you got to get going, man. It's 8:20 now, and we are past time for how long you could stay on the show. But why don't you tell people where they can find you, support you, listen to you, all those good things.
Yeah, so you'll find all my writing at antiwar.com if you look in the top news section. You could listen to my show. It's called Anti-War News with Dave DeCamp. It's on YouTube, Odyssey, Rumble. If you're watching this on YouTube, go subscribe to the channel. You could also listen to the podcast version wherever you listen to podcasts. And then follow me on Twitter at DeCampDave. That's basically it.
Yeah, well, hey, Dave, we appreciate you coming on and giving us your time, man, and giving us your opinions on these wars and facts that people may not know. And I just want to say before you go, it was really funny. You brought up, what was it that you brought up on Timcast? Talking about how, you know, Israel kind of knew about this October 7th attack prior to October 7th. And you brought it up on Timcast. And Tim Kess is like, where's your proof of that? Where's your proof of that? And then literally, I shit you not, 3 days later, I was reading articles, news articles, that proved that Netanyahu knew about this stuff.
But I don't remember that specifically, but I remember Rechtenwald actually brought something up.
He brought up that Israel was killing their own people.
Yeah.
But you were there, I think he was there the day before you.
Or a couple days. And then I mentioned that and I told him that there was proof for that. But then, yeah, there was something else. I don't even remember.
Yeah, I thought it was that there was evidence that they were training and that Netanyahu knew all about that. And I'll be on Timcast on Monday. I'm sure he's going to push back on a bunch, or not Monday, a couple Mondays from now. But I'm sure he's going to push back on some things. But I can hang. Dave, I appreciate you coming on, man. Thank you so much. And we hope you keep doing all this great work that you do. We appreciate you. You're a net benefit to this movement, and we couldn't live without you.
That's great. I really appreciate that. Good talking to you guys.
Yep, you too, man. All right, guys. Everyone go follow Dave DeCamp. That guy's great. He's busy, man. 6 articles a day.
That's insane.
He's a master.
I don't know if I could do one a day.
It's hard for me to do one a week. I have a writing team for my campaign, and we can't put out one a week. So, you know, it's just a lot. It's a lot to do that. That guy's just like him and Scott Horton together basically make like a foreign policy megazord. That's how it works. Guys, so before we take off, we're going to do a little bit longer. We're going to talk about the Zen Band.
Oh, yeah.
Because Big Tobacco's under attack again. And also, we're going to talk...
Isn't even tobacco?
I don't know.
I know it's like nicotine pouches without the cancer.
Oh. Well, tobacco is not the part that gives you the cancer. It's the chemicals.
Yeah. So it's not like chewing tobacco or smoking, but it gives you nicotine. And I know it's very popular with like younger people.
They're trying to send super chats and it says it keeps blocking it.
What the heck?
YouTube fucking hates us, dude. I don't know. We're not that bad. Probably that Owen Benjamin episode. We may, after that one get mixed the rounds, we might end up on Rumble full time. I don't know. What I want to talk about is these infiltrators, these fucking pedophile snake infiltrators into the libertarian and gun community movements that were found out over the last couple of days. There's a trans person on Twitter, goes by the name of Ashley, real name, Will. Dread Pirate Ash. He's changed his name a bunch of times.
Yeah. I've always just,
and then Goose is his wife. Yep. And they've, came around a couple years ago. Probably 2 or 3 years ago. And I think at one point I followed Ashley very briefly and then unfollowed. And the reason why was, I'll tell you, it was like a very shady kind of situation going on there. Like all of a sudden, out of the blue, there's this person trying to get into gun groups. And then all of a sudden, they're posting pictures of all these really expensive guns, but also saying that they're having financial problems. Okay, like, I've been in enough group chats to know, like, you don't just let anybody in the group chat, okay? Because letting anybody in the group chat ends terribly. You end up in prison in Michigan for a plot to kidnap the governor, right? Like, this is what happens when you get around the wrong people in a group chat and start, even if you're just trolling and saying jokes. So, like, I just want this to be like a warning, a hyper warning to people that there's shady ass fucking people out there online that are fake, that are lying to you today, right now. I guarantee it. There's people that are lying to you online about who they are and what they are. So, like, this person was taking pictures and using a filter to make themselves look 20 years younger. No one knew they were in their 40s, by the way. Nobody knew.
Yeah, I thought they were around my age.
To look very young, using these face filters to look very young. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they were arrested, and everyone found out that they were arrested for CP. Mm-hmm. Now, there was some speculation at first that the ATF was called on them, and that's how the ATF showed up and found these pictures. And then there was some other speculation that what they had done was open files from Hunter Biden's laptop, and those were on, all those images were on their computers. Come to find out, and I just read another new report about this online from somebody that actually started calling these authorities, found out that, as far as the local authorities were aware, no federal agencies had been involved whatsoever. Zero. There were no federal agents involved in this. It was a cyber crimes division of the local police found out. They had over 1,000 prepubescent, harmful child pictures on their computers. Okay. This is not, oh, we opened the wrong file on our computer. This is fucking bullshit. Like, straight up, you're a pedophile bullshit. Then, and anybody who wants to fucking protect and make excuses for these people, because I've seen that online too, fuck you. Like, the fact that they were lying to you about their age and how they looked and everything, I mean, to the point where they were making you think they were 20-something-year-old trans tweens or whatever, right? Like, dude, if that's not enough for you, and then you see the picture and they're obviously like twacked the fuck out tweakers that are in their like mid to late 40s and look like absolute skeletons. Like,
yeah,
dude, come on. That's
my mom's in her late 60s.
And look younger.
And looks significantly younger.
Yes. Like, this is crazy, dude. Like, absolutely insane. But hey, the Almighty Beach did drop us a $10 super chat. I appreciate you. So, we're not, you know, all these, like, now conspiracy theories that are out here about this situation, fuck all those theories. Like, just call and get firsthand knowledge of the case, and you'll see that these are aggravated cases. Aggravated cases, meaning prepubescent. Over 1,000 images, prepubescent CP on this trans person and his wife's computer. Okay. You don't download that by accident, dude. It's not some file that you accidentally download. You open a file like that, you immediately call the police and say who sent or whatever, right? Like, who sent you those things? Like, you delete them immediately off your computer. You don't fucking sit there and hold those things on your computer. Like, that's not a normal, sane human being. Like, even a status is you're going to immediately call and be like, yo, someone just sent me this file that's full of child porn and I need you guys to fucking go and handle them. Mm-hmm. Like, an anti pedophile person like me would have immediately been like, either this person's got to die or go to jail, right? Like, that's it. And so, like, there are no excuses for this. And look, I know they're going to get their day in court and everybody's going to figure out what's going on, but, like, these are the facts. I don't want to hear that, oh, they opened Hunter Biden's laptop. No, bitch. No, bitch.
I'm distancing myself. If they get fully acquitted in a court of law, I might give them a second chance, but... It's both of them. It does not look good. It's local. It doesn't look like a setup or
no. And well, and they had said that they had been putting out that they had made contact with the ATF several months ago, that the ATF had showed up asking questions about their guns and this and that. And then come to find out, as far as the local PD and everybody's aware, there's been no federal agencies that contacted them whatsoever. So like, it's almost like they knew they were going to get in trouble and they started trying to spin a story back then. Like that, you know what I mean? Like that really makes a lot of sense. Yes, I'm ready for Georgia Top Lops, the $2 super chat. Thank you, sir. Yes. Yes, I'll be there tomorrow. I don't know when you're getting there, but I'll be there tomorrow afternoon at like noon. And I'm going to get some barbecue. I'm have to get a haircut and a beard trim because I don't have time here. But yeah, I'll definitely be in Georgia tomorrow. I'm staying tomorrow night and Saturday night. So I can't wait. I can't wait to see Top, dude. That's the homie.
Top, I don't know if AJ's still mad at you. I don't know if he was mad in the first place.
What was he mad about?
Something about the Owen Benjamin.
Oh, yeah. They're going to troll. Top's going to troll, dude. That's how it is.
No, Top was a... was genuine and gave some good advice.
No, AJ just took it wrong.
Well, AJ was kind of freaking out about some stuff.
Well, he's really sad about Owen. I could tell you that much right now.
Well, I was sitting there listening.
He's a big fan of Owen.
And like wanting to just fucking yell at the screen.
I know. I'm very glad that I decided not to have you guys on that episode.
Because he got to talk like a lot more openly with you than.
Yeah,
me,
and well,
he
that was
said
that was the whole goal, like, and in fact, fuck? It was hilarious because I saw some people online today saying, "Oh, I watched that episode where Owen like railroaded Josh or whatever," and I'm like, first of all, no, that's he didn't railroad me. We talked about before the show. I said I don't really want this to be a debate. I said I'd rather just talk about your views on the government and this stuff that you've been talking about recently, and just lay it out. I said I'm going to push back on a few points.
Mm-hmm.
And so if anybody took that as me being bulldozed after I called him out on the volunteer fire departments and eminent domain and like all the things that are oppressive that the government does, and he didn't have an answer for those things, I didn't freeze up when he brought up, well, I own my land outright. I froze up because I was like, I bet you still pay fucking property taxes, dude. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't bulldoze me. It wasn't a fucking debate. I raised a couple of points to push back on him. But if it was a debate, you've seen me in debates. Anybody who thinks I got bulldozed with Owen on the show has never watched one of my debates.
Yeah,
because I don't get bulldozed, dude.
I would have been more ambitious about pushing back on some things, but
I know you would have, and so would have AJ, and that would have been would have not been a good show. I didn't want it to be a debate show. I wanted him to say his piece and have his time and kind of let the chips fall where they may. And we've done numbers. I mean, that show's done, well over 1,000 views here on YouTube. It's doing numbers on the podcast catcher now that it's out this evening. And I wanted it to be a good show, not like I just had to debate every single thing he said. So anybody thinks I got bulldozed doesn't know me very well.
Yeah.
First of all, because I there's a lot more I could have said. I could have went way further in depth on the Fed and the warfare state and all kinds of shit. You guys know I talk about stuff all the time.
The big thing I would have brought up is why he thinks theft is necessary to run a system. That's the big thing I would have pushed back. Because he's like, it's just a system. It's entirely funded by theft.
Top wants to know if you and AJ believe in the Nephilim.
I would guess AJ does.
AJ does for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is funny because he's the not religious
okay,
one in the room.
How are you defining Nephilim, Top? Give me a definition.
There's
my
only one way.
Died,
there's
so
only
I can't
one,
read the chat.
There's only one way to define Nephilim, buddy.
There's multiple ways.
Oh, come on, dude.
I,
come on, buddy.
Every
time we...
Like,
every time.
I can go to
every
my
time
lore,
with
man.
You, dude. It's gay like, every time with you.
I don't think there are necessarily, like... children of fallen angels roaming the earth. I'm not a very superstitious.
We're
going
to have Aiden
guy.
From the Lore Lodge back on to school you up again. Top, did you do the show with Aiden from Lore Lodge? Did you guys talk about Nephilim? Was it good? Let us know in the chat.
You'll have to have me on Nephilim Def Squad to have on a
That's
doubter.
A good idea. That's a good idea, Top. You should have him on Nephilim Def Squad.
Have on a doubter, somebody that can... It can go into depths about like why the nukes are actually real and
Yeah. So, all right, guys. Well, I got to get going. We're at an hour. I can't do a full show tonight or a full 2-hour show tonight because I have to get ready for flying to Atlanta in the morning. Mm-hmm. If you guys are in the Georgia, Atlanta area, metro area, please come see me tomorrow or Saturday.
Take like 30 seconds to make fun of Hillary Clinton.
Oh, that's right. Fuck. We do have to talk about Hillary Clinton. Okay, listen. That was the funniest tweet I've ever seen. I legitimately saw that tweet and thought it was Dennis. I thought I'm not kidding you. If Dennis is watching this, Dennis, I owe you $6 because I thought the Hillary Clinton Twitter page was legitimately you, because she made a post to Margot Robbie saying, mm-hmm. you know, don't worry. What'd she say? You are Knuff.
Knuff. Yeah, she killed the Kennergy.
She killed the Kennergy.
She fucking killed it.
Yes.
It's dead.
Yeah. It was hard to watch, hard to read. And then I thought it was Dennis. I went to the page. I was like, holy shit, it's really here. But then I did make a banger ass tweet out of it and said, believe her. She knows a thing or two about a man winning something she thought she was entitled to, which is true. Mm-hmm. You know, happy birthday to this future president. Yeah.
Have you seen Barbie?
Unfortunately, I have watched Barbie. So
I loved it.
My girls wanted to watch Barbie. Mm-hmm. My little girls that are 11, 9, and 6. They wanted to watch Barbie really bad. And so I pirated it at work on my phone and watched it prior because I try to screen anything that's over PG, especially. I'm always going to screen first because it's actually rated PG-13. And I was like, there was a couple of scenes in there where I was like, I don't know if I want my kids to watch this where he's talking about beaching dudes off at the beach, right? And a couple other things too that I didn't really want my kids to see, but I did end up letting the two older girls watch it. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I'm glad I did because they were both like, I don't get it. Why do these girls want just like a whole like land of women running everything? Like they even understood that it was the dumbest premise ever, right? And someone brought up online the other day that it's really just Elf with Barbie. It's the movie Elf with Barbie. And it sinks in a minute. It'll sink in and you'll get it.
But Ken is better than...
Yeah, the Ken buddy. Listen, he was the best part of that whole movie. And it's not... They even tried to throw Michael Cera in there.
Who was Alan.
Yeah, Alan. They tried to throw him in there to like make the men look even worse. And it helped.
Yeah, he made Ken look great.
It's like you guys tried your hardest to make the patriarchy look so bad, and everybody who walked away from it. Everybody who walked away from it were like, yeah.
Like, even in universe, everyone thought they were awesome. Like, even within the movie, like, the Casa houses were selling out.
Yeah. And it's like, so, I don't know, man. I think that the Hillary Clinton tweet was hilarious. She's such a, see you next Tuesday, that anytime she does something like that, it's great for humanity. And I'm not now, nor have I ever been suicidal, in case anyone was wondering. We gotta get going. I'll have another show with you on Tuesday. Hopefully I'm gonna try my hardest to get Top Lobster and his co-host from the Nephilim Death Squad to come on Tuesday. We'll see if you guys are available. I love you to death. Hey, before you guys go to vote.freeandequal.org and vote for me in the poll to try and get us into the live debate. It's a televised debate. Currently, we'll have RFK Jr., two other libertarians, the nominee for the Socialist and Liberation Party, who's absolutely insane, by the way, and possibly Jill Stein or Cornel West. So I'll be like the only right of center candidate in that debate. We need that voice there. It needs to happen. This is televised. This is like a big deal. It's not a little debate. It's a big deal. And we are only in like seventh place and we only have to be in the top six. So we need you guys to go on and vote. Everybody vote as many times or as much as you can. Get your wife to vote. Get five friends to vote. If your kids have cell phones, have them vote. Just put me in there because right now we're trying to get past some other people. So if you vote for the other ones, it might put them up. It might just cancel out. But we need to get into that debate because that's going to be awesome for our ideas. At the end of the day, like I'm going to get to go on there and talk about turning the ATF building headquarters into a dog park, and I'm going to talk about the Federal Reserve being Satan. I'm going to talk about these things to these people. on TV. So help me get into that debate by voting there for me. You can rank your top six. It's not ranked, but you can pick your top six and all of them get a vote. But I would like it if you could make sure that we're getting the votes and getting up ahead, because I'd like to get past Cornell West at least. But I'll see you guys on Tuesday. Hopefully we'll have another good show. You got anything before we go, Ryan?
Follow me on Twitter at BulldogGamer28. We're like speedrunning the end of this show here. Like, comment, subscribe, give me some yepcocks in the chat. That's all.
Yeah, yepcocks. Anyways, I love you guys to death. Thanks for the super chats. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening and watching. We appreciate you being here live. I wish more people would be here live, so make sure you subscribe if you haven't. Until next Tuesday, don't forget to break cycle.
Due to legal reasons, I just have to explain. The lyrics of my last song may seem to contain a violent call to action in the verse and the frame, but I just meant it in Minecraft. The helicopter part was in reference to GTA 5 and the things you do. So any violence you commit, I am not an excuse, because I just meant it in Minecraft. What chipper is my friend and he's constantly cold. Accusations of incitement getting totally old. Make your own choices, yeah, you have control, because I just meant it in Minecraft. Obviously, I would never advocate force, unless it's due process and a trial, of course. And if you're convicted, we will make you a corpse in Minecraft, just in Minecraft. You're nothing, I mean, you know it. The product is getting close to COVID.